Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
Please be seated. The jury's all present and accountable.
And we're going to go back on the record and see C250966, State of Letter versus Thomas Randolph. State of Letter that Mr. Randolph was present with his attorney, Deputy District Attorney on behalf of the state. We both parties to go to the presence of our jury.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
State, you may call your next witness.
Carl Klein.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give this action with the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. You could state his letter name for the record, please.
My name is Carl Klein. That's CARLKLEIN.
Please state whatever you
want. Thank you. Sir, how are you employed?
I'm employed with telephone company Lumen.
And what do you do for Lumen?
Currently, I'm in the manager of the 911 Public Safety Services Group.
Manager of 911, I'm sorry?
Public Safety Answering Group.
Okay. What kind of training have you had that allows you to work for Lumen in that capacity?
I've worked with Lumen for 27 years. I started as a basic technician. I've worked my way up through three different levels of engineering. And then also did some supervisory work for that group and now manager work.
Okay. And as the manager, what does that mean you do on a day-to-day basis?
I oversee the repair group that monitors the 911 network that we provide to different public safety answering points.
Okay. Would you be the person who manages the 911 associated with Las Vegas and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department?
Yes, my group does manage that.
Okay, as well as other metropolitan areas?
Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds, okay. But certainly the one that encompasses Clark County, Las Vegas.
Yes.
So can you explain for the members of the jury what happens when an individual calls, you know, picks up the phone and calls 911? What happens on, like, the Lumen side?
On the Lumen side, depending on which company places the phone call, because obviously there could be wireless, cell phone, voice over IP, or landline calls that could go over. Whatever company owns those switches has lines that go to the selective routers, which is an aggregation point for 911 calls, and it takes a look at the telephone number that dialed 911 and determines the correct police department to route that call. From there, it'll route the call to that appropriate police department.
So when it looks at the number, is it trying to associate that number with a location to determine which police department gets the call routed to them?
Yes.
Okay. And I think you mentioned in your answer that there's some variation, whether it's a landline, a cell phone, or a VoIP?
Correct.
Can you explain what VoIP is?
VoIP is voice over IP phone services. It's a new digital service for phones.
Okay. How long has that been around, approximately?
10 years at least, maybe longer.
Okay. What are the differences in how the system deals with 911 of a landline versus, like, a cell phone versus VoIP?
There is not much difference. The main difference is with VoIP or cellular phones, instead of sending the actual telephone number of the caller to the police department,
Okay. They
will send what's called a PANI, pseudo-ANI, other abbreviations, or ESRKs.
Okay.
Multiple definitions of that, but they send these pseudo-ANIs, which again is just a telephone number that is built in the database to say if a call comes from that telephone number, it will route the call that's associated with that PANI.
Okay, and is that the same thing as, like, so you're trying to link it to a location?
Yes.
Okay. Does it show up different, like at metros, the police departments, 911 dispatch, if it's VoIP, wireless, or landline, can they see a difference, the dispatcher?
They will after another part of the 911 call is after the police department receives that call and that telephone number. It will query Alley database, address, location, information database.
Okay.
That provides the calling parties information for that. So with landlines, it'll just give the name of the person that owns that telephone line and their address. With voice over IP, again, it'll show the company that provides the voice over IP service and whatever information they have associated with that call, along with the actual callback number of the caller.
Okay.
And wireless is basically the same as VoIP.
Okay.
Where it'll query that database, but they, depending on what era this was, would also provide the information on who's calling, what wireless company is calling, and the location of that caller using typically GPS coordinates.
How about, is there any like difference in timing on how quickly any of those methods get to the service or get to the...
No, they're typically within milliseconds.
Okay. So then what's the next step after the person dials the phone, and then what happens after that?
The call goes to the selective router over what we call ES trunks.
Okay.
And they're emergency service trunks, and there's a limit to how many trunks from each end office or operating switch that connects to our selective router. The selective router will do that lookup to determine which police department to call routes to. Then once they determine it, we'll send the calls to the police department over what we call EM trunk, or emergency management trunks.
Okay.
And with that call, the phone number and voice goes to the police department. Their equipment then does that alley bid to determine the address, name, and owner of whoever is calling.
Okay.
Based on the telephone number that was sent to them.
So the call first comes into Lumen. Lumen determines what the appropriate police department is based on the sort of location, and then it goes to the police department's dispatch, and then they can actually see a location that's associated with the number?
Correct.
Okay. What are things that can go wrong when someone dials 911? What would affect whether a connection is made or lost?
There could be multiple things that could cause a connection to be lost. Typically, there could be trouble with the circuits. As I mentioned, the ES trunks that connect the end office to our selective router. There may be some sort of problem with their circuits, a fiber cut that's impacting the area or where that office is from, or other circuit type of things. There's also issues with the circuit that may scramble the telephone number, so that when that call goes to our selective router, we will not get the information to properly route the call.
Okay. When it's when there's something wrong with the circuit, the first problem that you mentioned, would that generally then affect a particular like geographical area within a city?
Typically, yes.
Okay. And then the second problem that you mentioned, would that be like geographically discrete as well, or is that different?
It may be a little bit different. Every 911 trunk, in case a telephone number is garbled, has a default police department assigned to it. So any calls that come down that particular 911 trunk will default route to the predetermined police department.
Okay.
That was agreed upon by the police department and whoever owns the switch.
And in that second instance, if it's kind of garbled for one police department, does it end up going to like another police department in the area, or is there some sort of like backup for that?
There's a possibility it could go to a different police department, but it would get answered.
I'm sorry?
But it would get answered.
Okay.
It just wouldn't be the right police department.
Okay. In the first instance where you said there could be a circuit problem affecting the area, so that would mean the call maybe wouldn't go through and the person would have to reinitiate a call?
Yes.
I think you touched on this, but are there, I guess like within when you build a 911 system, are there sort of factors in the building that account for how busy or how many 911 calls an agency might get?
Yes, typically when we engineer a 911 network, we try to establish what's called a 0.01 grade of service, which is a standard that indicates during an average busy hour or average day, only one out of 100 calls may overflow to a busy signal.
Okay. I'm sorry, say that number again.
One out of 100.
Okay. In the case, so it's able to handle all of those, so maybe if 100 people call in at once, one will get a busy signal?
Not necessarily like that, but it's the formula is written so that on an average busy day,
I see.
Only one out of 100 911 calls would go to a busy signal.
Okay. And would that be like in the case of sort of a catastrophic, like a big event that occurs in a metropolitan area?
Yes, that could be a possibility where you have several hundred, several thousand people trying to dial 911.
Okay.
At the same time.
And if a person is like that one in the hundred, do you know what type of signal they receive? Do they receive like literally that beep, beep, beep busy signal, or do you know if they get a recording?
It would be one or the other. I'm not sure specifically which one they would get in that instance.
Okay, would that depend on the agency?
Yes.
And how many, for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, how many routers are there for each of the various methods of calling in?
There are two selective routers that we utilize. They're built for redundancy, so in the event one fails, calls can complete over the other selective router.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll pass the witness, Your Honor.
How you doing, Mr. Klein?
Good, sir.
You've worked in this business with Lumen for 27 years.
Yes, sir.
Jobs changed a lot over the years, sounds like, for you personally, right?
Yes.
You'd also agree with me that technology's changed a lot in those 27 years, right?
Yes, it has.
I'm assuming in the training that you've received in the last almost three decades, you've probably learned a little bit about the history of the 911 system.
Yes.
Okay. Didn't always have 911 in the United States, correct?
Correct.
First came into being in the early 70s, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And it's not until like 1998 that Senate Bill 800 signed by President Clinton that makes it the national number. You agree with that?
I'm not sure.
Okay, you just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. If I were to represent that to you, you wouldn't have any basis to dispute that, would you?
I don't know the answer, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other.
Okay. I want to talk about what you focus on the Lumen side of things. You have a responsibility and you have a team that works with you, and you want to make sure and maintain a system that if I pick up my phone in an emergency and dial 911, somebody is going to answer it on the other end, right?
Yes, sir.
You would agree with me, in order to route the call from one of the routers that you have serving the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, the call has to get there first, right?
Get to the selective router?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Back in way up to when 911's in its infancy, all the 911 calls that came in were over like a hard landline, right?
Yes.
Like the old school phones that we had where there was actually a wire coming to our house that would take that transmission, correct?
Yes, sir.
Eventually, there are other methods of communication that are developed as technology changes, right?
Yes, sir.
And you'd agree with me that as you sit here today in 2023, the technology is a lot more stable, accurate, and reliable than it was like in the 80s or 90s, right?
I would say it's just as stable. The new technologies just have added additional information in another way for different types of services to connect. But the basic E911 network, which has been in place since, like you said, that late 80s, 90s, that's been pretty stable for the whole time.
Right. The E911 network, once a call gets in and it gets out, right?
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk about circumstances where maybe a call doesn't get in, okay?
Okay.
If I'm hiking up in, do you live in Las Vegas?
No, sir.
Okay. You familiar with Las Vegas at all?
Have I what?
Are you familiar with Las Vegas at all?
Not really.
Okay. There's a place out west of town called Red Rock Canyon. You can go hiking out there. There's mountains. There's no cell service when you get up in those mountains. Can you appreciate that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's say I go hiking out there and I fall down and break my leg. And I want to call 911. I hit 911 on my cell phone. The call never makes it to your router, right?
That's a possibility, yes.
Right. So I might be calling 911 and your equipment with Lumen is sitting there waiting for it to come in. They just can't get it. Fair?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Between old-fashioned landlines and the cellular telephone example I just gave you, there's a technology referred to a few different ways, a few different times on direct examination. If I say VoIP, you know what I mean, right?
I believe so, yes.
Voice over and IP. You put it IP.
Yep.
The IP stands for Internet Protocol, right?
Correct.
Okay. Certainly you can understand and appreciate that the Internet has gotten a lot better between, say, the year 2000 and the year 2023. You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Voice over Internet Protocol is a call system where I have a subscription with some subscriber. Like, let me give you a name. You ever heard of Vonage?
Yes.
Vonage is a voice over Internet Protocol subscriber, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so like back in the 90s, 1998 to be exact, Vonage came into existence. Were you aware of that?
No.
Were you aware that between 1998 and 2003, Vonage didn't even offer 911 services to its subscribers?
No, I don't.
Okay. Would that surprise you?
I don't know how to answer that. No, I don't.
Okay. You don't really have any meaningful testimony to give us about the history and the accuracy of Vonage as a voice over internet protocol provider, right?
No.
You can just tell us what happens when a call actually gets there, right?
Gets to our selective router from that provider, yes.
Okay. So let's say it's 2008 and I have a Vonage service in my house. I no longer have a landline. That's my service provider to make an outgoing phone call. There were a lot of people like that, right?
I don't know how many.
Okay. Would it surprise you that there are people that had a subscription through Vonage and didn't have an old-fashioned landline?
No, that wouldn't surprise me.
Right. And if Vonage, the voice over internet protocol provider, goes out and they pick up their phone to make a call, not going to get to your routers, right?
Correct.
Okay. You mentioned some circumstances where a busy signal might be obtained by someone trying to dial 911. Remember that?
Yes, sir.
And you agree with me that if you're shooting for it in a perfect scenario, 1 out of 100 calls doesn't get through, statistically speaking. You agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
During a busy hour.
Yeah. So even in the circumstance where everything's working the way that you want it to, the service providers are getting those calls out, they're coming to your routers, even in those circumstances, 1 out of 100 might not work, right?
During a busy hour, yes.
Okay. And during a non-busy hour, if my service provider is Vonage and I pick up my phone to utilize it and Vonage is out, my internet's out, my voice over internet protocol provider isn't allowing me to complete calls, not going to get to you at all, right?
Correct.
So in that circumstance, 100 out of 100 aren't going to get through. Agreed?
From the Vonage point of standing, yes.
Okay. You're familiar with different types of busy signals, aren't you?
Yes.
There is what we call like the old-fashioned busy signal where I call a number and maybe someone's on the other line and it gives kind of a slow, steady beeping sound, right?
Correct.
There's also a fast busy signal, right?
Correct.
What causes that?
Typically some sort of network failure.
So
it would cause that type of busy to...
Right. So hypothetically, I pick up a telephone to dial 911 and I have Vonage. I might have a deadline, right?
Possibly, yes.
And if I call back again, the system's down, I might get a fast busy signal, right?
I don't know what Vonage would provide if their network is down.
But you'd agree with me, if their network is down, they wouldn't provide any call routing to Lumen, right?
I would agree with that.
Okay. You'd accept the possibility that a system can go down momentarily, right?
Yes.
Like I'm in the middle of a phone call with a voice over internet protocol provider like Vonage, and the system goes out, the call's just gone, right?
That could be a possibility.
Okay. And then later, system might come back online. You understand that's how that works, right?
Yes, sir. It could happen.
And then my phone could work, right?
Possibly, yes.
And it's also extremely possible that if my system's out, I try a call a couple times. By the time I try it the third, fourth, fifth time, maybe I get through, right?
That could be a possibility.
That's not crazy at all, is it?
It could be a possibility.
Nothing further, thank you.
Sir, when you talked about how the system is sort of calibrated, so I think you said in a busy hour, 1 in 100 would, like, sort of calling at the same time would get the busy signal. Do you recall that?
Correct.
Okay. And that's assuming, like, everybody making a call all at once?
Possibly, yes.
Okay. Are you any more likely to get the busy signal depending on what kind of method you're using, like landline, cell, or VoIP?
All those companies should be connecting to the 911 network with that same PL1 rate of service. That's kind of the NINA specs for what's acceptable.
Okay. And all of that is sort of predicated on the idea that, like, there are just some instances where you could have a really busy situation in a city and, you know, things can go wrong a little bit in terms of the connection.
Correct.
And if you do get that call, or if you are making a call, I think Mr. Tomchek was asking, you know, if you're in the middle of the call, then you would be able to call back and possibly get the connection after that.
Yes, that could be a possibility.
Thank you.
Any follow-up, Mr. Tomchek?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good, ladies and gentlemen, the jury has any questions for this witness? Seeing no response, sir, thank you very much for your testimony. Your excuse.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next witness.
Say to Hallmark Bartlett, please go.
My name is Mark Bartlett, M-A-R-K, B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, are you familiar with the address of 5200 Dana Springs?
Yes, sir, that's where I reside.
Okay, so you still live there to this day?
Yes, I do.
Were you living there on May 8th, 2008?
Yes.
Okay. What I'd like to do is, Your Honor, by stipulation, the parties have stipulated to states proposed 1 and 2 being admitted into evidence, 316 being admitted into evidence, 313, 312, and 311.
That's correct.
So 311 to 313, and 316?
313, 311, 312, 316, and exhibits 1 and 2.
Okay. Those are all the admitted pursuant to stipulation.
Thank you very much. Sir, if I could, may I approach the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You said you lived at 5200 Dana Springs.
Yes, correct.
All right. I want to show you first exhibit 313. Do you see your home there?
Yes, right here in the corner.
Okay. And if we look at states 312, is this kind of from the vantage point diagonally looking out from your house?
Yes.
Okay. And you're familiar with a home at 6517 Rancho Santa Fe, correct?
Yes.
I want to show you exhibit 1. Is that that home?
Yes.
Exhibit 2, is that another example of that home?
Yes.
A little bit closer up. And is that the home there, kind of between these two palm trees?
Yep.
And for the reference, I was showing exhibit 312. Lastly, I want to show you states 311. Is this an overhead map showing your house and 6517 Rancho Santa Fe?
Yep.
Okay. And this is all kind of fair and accurate depictions of all these locations.
Yep.
Okay.
This time I'd like to switch over to the overhead. Oh, no. Okay, I'm not going to.
Just remember, just hit the big blue button.
Thank you, Mark.
Chris.
First one to publish, 313. You had indicated this was your home, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Publishing 312. This is a vantage point from your house looking in the direction of 6517 Rancho Santa Fe, is that right?
Yes.
And you had indicated it was this house between the two palm trees.
Correct.
Publishing 311. This is an overhead, and I'll zoom out. This is an overhead of your house and 6517 Rancho Santa Fe.
Yes.
And you had indicated, publishing one, this is the 6517 Rancho Santa Fe house.
Correct.
And publishing two, this is also another picture of that home.
Yes.
Okay. I want to turn your attention to that evening, probably around, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night, something along those lines. What were you doing that night?
I was working on my car in the garage, the trunk area.
Okay. What type of car were you working on?
A 63 Chevy Impala.
All right. When you were working on that car, was your garage door up?
Yes, it was.
Was your car in the garage? Was it in the driveway? Where was it?
My car is pretty long, and it, you know, it like fits in there exactly. And I was like laying into the trunk.
All right.
Like across the batteries, you know, working on it.
Around 8:30, is there something that catches your attention that kind of causes you to look away from working on your car?
Yeah, when somebody pulls up, I get up to see who it is, and I notice it was across the neighbor lady waiting to get into a garage.
Okay, and when you say the neighbor lady, are you talking about...
That's objection to leaving.
Well, I haven't suggested the answer. When you said the neighbor lady, what home are you referring to?
The one, the 65...
Publishing to. This home?
Yeah, the 6517, yes.
All right. So you saw a car pull in around that time?
Yes, I saw a car pull in.
Did the car go all the way into the garage?
Yes, it did.
What happened next with the garage door?
The garage door closed.
All right, did you watch it close?
Yes.
Okay. What's the next thing you remember happening after that garage door closes?
Well, at the same time, my friend called me when I was standing outside of the garage, you know, and I got up to look to see who it was. My friend called at the exact same time, and I was on the phone with him.
Okay. And what was the name of your friend?
Alex McCardo.
All right. So you're on the phone with your friend Alex, and then what happens?
I hear gunshots.
Coming from what direction?
From the 6517.
How many gunshots do you hear?
Three rapid gunshots, like bang, bang, bang.
Okay.
Then a little pause, and another shot, a pause, another shot, pause, shot.
Okay, so you hear three in quick succession, some pauses and shots after that.
Yes.
Do you say anything? Do you react? What do you do at that point?
I told my friend, oh, it sounds like they're shooting. I wasn't, you know, 100% sure. I said, oh, they sound like they're shooting. So I said, I'll call you back.
Okay.
So I went, I didn't hear no screaming, no yelling, nothing. So I went back to work in my trunk.
If you heard screaming or yelling, would you have done something?
Yeah, I probably would have called the police.
Okay. So then you don't kind of hear anything, but you tell your friend Alex, man, I'm hearing gunshots.
Yes.
And then at some point, do the police arrive?
Yeah, in about 20 minutes, the police showed up, a lot of police.
Okay. Eventually, do you speak to police officers about what you heard and saw?
Yes.
Okay. Do you provide police officers with the phone number of your friend Alex?
Yes, I do.
And was that phone number 702-557-2752?
Yes.
Okay. I think at some point, do you even offer to provide copies of your records to them if they need them? Okay. I'm going to approach with what's been admitted as Exhibit 316.
I'm going to turn to page 2-3 of this document. I want you to look at right here. Is that Alex's phone number?
Yes.
Can you tell me, just read off, that's a 24-hour clock, but can you read off what the time is there?
Looks like 8:33.
Okay, but it says 20:33, just
yeah,
technically?
20:33, yes.
Okay, but if you could convert the 12 hours
yeah,
to 8:33. Publishing 3:16. Please read out what that date is.
5/8/2008.
Please read out that time.
20:33.
Whose phone number is that?
That's.
I'd ask that you say the complete number, please.
Okay. Please read out.
20.
Go ahead.
20:33:36.
Please read out that phone number.
702-249-0807.
Is that your phone number?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that's just a repeat of your same number, correct?
Correct.
And then, and is this Alex's number?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have no further questions for this witness.
So, how long had you lived at that house?
Since 94.
Since 1994. So you still live there?
Yes.
So you've lived there a long time?
Yes.
You know the neighborhood?
Yes.
And it's fair to say that you told the police on the night in question what you'd heard?
Yes.
Okay. And fair to say that, you know, way back when you were talking about this, your memory was probably, you know, very fresh as to what happened. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
And so what drew your attention, let's set this up. You're working on your car, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you have a call with your friend. You're talking to your friend at some point.
Yes.
I'm going to show you that phone, that call, okay? Do you see that, the call in orange on there, or yellow?
Yes.
Okay, so you're talking to your friend. And you said the time, you actually put it in, took it away from 20:33, and you made it, it's 8:33 p.m. and 36 seconds. That's when it starts.
Yes.
Okay. At least that's what the records show. Is that true?
Yes, correct.
And the call that you have with your friend lasts for about 270 seconds, a little over 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't dispute that at all, do you? Now, while you're on this call, at 8:33, 36 seconds, and talking to your friend, you notice the neighbor's vehicle show up and start to go into the garage.
That was before my friend, the neighbor, put in the garage, and I got the call at the same time.
Okay, so what you're saying is that simultaneously, you see the neighbor's car. And
yeah, I get up, I hear the neighbor's car, I get up, see who it is, and then just right then, my friend Alex called me.
Okay. And do you remember previously at a prior proceeding saying you were on the phone and the car pulled up? Do you remember saying that?
No.
If I showed you a copy of prior proceedings and what you testified to, would that refresh your memory?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Page from prior proceedings, page 93 and 94. May I approach you?
Yes.
So I want to go through this really carefully so that we can see exactly mm-hmm. what you said. Okay, if you could just read to yourself page 93, where you start with saying you're talking to your friend and your friend's name is Alex. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And then just read to yourself 93, please. And let me know when you're done.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to turn to 94 and just ask you to read a portion of that, too. Do you have a chance to review that, sir?
Yep.
Okay. It appears that what you said was that you were on the phone with Alex and that you saw the car that show up, right?
Yeah, at the same time.
Okay. So what you're saying, so, you know, is just basically that I'm on the phone, I see the neighbor's car show up.
You know, basically, the car pulled up, the phone at the same time.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. And do you remember that when the car pulled up, the neighbor car pulled up, the garage door opened? You
yes.
explained that, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't see anybody get out. You said you saw the car just go in.
Yeah, the car just went in.
Nothing, no reason to really pay attention to much of this. It's just normal, everyday.
Yeah.
Neighbors come and
yeah,
go.
Yeah, neighbors come and go.
Talking on the phone. And then you say you watched the door close, the garage door close.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you said that about 25 to 30 seconds after that, after the garage door closes, you hear shot.
Yes.
Okay. So if we understand this correctly, you're on the phone, you're saying at about 8:33, 36, simultaneously with the calls beginning, you see the car show up.
Yeah. Right?
So we know, we can tell from this that the neighbor car shows up around pretty close to 8:33, 36, approximately, right? So, yes?
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
And the garage door opens, the neighbor car goes in, right?
Correct.
And then the garage door closes.
Correct.
And after that, 25 to 30 seconds go by, we hear shots, or you hear shots.
Yeah.
Okay. You told the jury that today. And you, in a prior proceedings, told the judge that. Fair to say?
Yes.
And that's what happened. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I know it's been a while, okay? And so, you at first, you've told us today, from what I can tell, you heard three rapid shots.
Yes, right? Correct.
Do you? And then there was a pause, and then a shot, a pause, then a shot, a pause, and a shot.
Yes.
Total six shots.
Six or seven shots. I can't recollect. It's been a while.
Okay, fair enough. Do you remember previously in a prior proceeding saying you thought there were four shots?
I can't recollect.
Okay. And again, it's been a long time. You're trying the best you can, right?
Yeah.
If I showed you a copy of what you said before, a transcript of when you described four shots, would that help refresh your memory?
Yeah.
Page 11, and specifically line, page 11, page 16, and I'm going to be showing him page line 10 through 17 of line, oh, page 11. May I approach you?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to show you where you testified under oath previously, and you were asked how many shots you heard, and if you could read lines 10 through 17 to yourself. Let me know when you're done, sir.
Yeah.
I'm also going to show you again another page where you're asked about the number of shots. Page 16, Counselor. And if you could just read to yourself lines 11 through 16.
Have you had a chance to review that?
Yes.
Okay.
Does that refresh your memory as to the fact that at one point you said that there were, in fact, four shots?
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, fair to say, it's been a long time. You're doing the best you can. You're telling us today it was six shots. A while back, you were saying it was four, right?
Yeah.
You could, you know, obviously be mistaken as to exactly what you heard. Is that right?
No, there's no mistake in gunshots.
Okay. No, I misspoke then. I don't mean that you didn't hear gunshots. I meant that today you described six shots, but back then...
Yeah, back then I was
hit. Four.
I was just saying, you know, what happened.
You're doing the best you could.
Yeah.
Okay? People are asking you to remember how many bang, bang, bangs you heard.
Yeah.
It can be kind of difficult. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
You didn't call the police when you heard this.
I did not.
Do you remember the night the police talked to you... You told them that you thought maybe it was firecrackers.
Yeah, somebody said it was kids or something, you know, they was play around,
right?
Stuff like that.
But then you also have said that you knew they were, somebody was blasting. You kind of said,
yeah.
You know, being around. I think you even described it. Look, I'm a little streetwise. I know gunshots when I hear, correct?
Yes, correct.
And you told your friend... They're blasting, and, you know, when you hear them blasting, it probably caused that end of the phone call. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I said I'll call you back.
Okay. So once you heard the blasting, you told your friend, I'm going to call you back, just to make sure you're safe and everything.
Yeah, just in case I heard any screaming or anything like that.
Okay, I'm going to again show you the phone records, okay? So at 8:33:36, you start this phone call. You see the vehicle come in, correct?
Yes.
And that phone call lasts 270 seconds, and towards the end of it, you're telling your friend, hey, look, I got to go, they're blasting, right there?
Yeah, we're daring to call, yeah.
And, you know, we went over 270 seconds is about, what, 4 minutes, 30 seconds. So somewhere... that the call would have ended around 8:38. You see that? You do the math, it's about 8:38.
Yeah.
You also said today that you thought police showed up about 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
Okay, again, you didn't have a watch, you're not timing how fast the police show up. It's just, you try to do the best you can. Is that right?
Yeah, just a guesstimation.
Okay. So you would have thought sometime, just in your, as you call it, guesstimation, sometime 20 minutes after 8:38, the police are going to arrive. Right? That's what you thought. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Concludes cross-examination.
Were you at this
moment? Yeah. Remember on cross-examination, you were asked about the timing of seeing that garage door close and then hearing the shots. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And you believe, I think you had said, you heard the shots just a few seconds after the garage door closed. Is that right?
Yeah.
No, Judge.
It was pretty quick.
30 seconds, I would ask you not to leave. And that is not what the testimony was.
Okay. Well, there was a lot of questions back and forth about whether it was at the same time. So this jury will remember the testimony as they remember it to be.
Okay, well then, how about this? I'm just going to read for completeness, page 94 of the prior proceeding.
Okay. Well, you're not going to read it into the record because he didn't say he didn't remember it.
Okay. Well, what did you say? What do you remember saying at the prior proceeding about how long after the garage door closed did you think you heard the gunshots?
It was. I thought it was right away. You know, probably be like 10, 15, 20 seconds. I thought it was right away.
Okay. Did you state previously it was like right away? I would say within 20 to 30 seconds.
Yes.
Okay.
Judge, if you could just, I think Mr. Hammond just made a mistake. If you could just read that sentence correctly.
Okay, I'll read it again. Page 94, lines 18 and 19. It was like right away. I would say within 20, 30 seconds.
Says 25.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
You said 25.
Sorry, that's my fault. I did read it wrong. My apologies. All right, 25, 30 seconds. Okay. So you believed it was right away after seeing that garage door closing?
Yes.
Okay. And was this at the beginning of your phone call with your friend?
Yeah.
Okay. And you said this happened around 20 minutes later the police show up?
Yeah.
Okay, so if your call started at 8:33, if you add 20 minutes, that would put it at about 8:53 at night?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
None.
Okay. Do the ladies and gentlemen here have any questions for this witness? Okay, same number. Oh, ma'am, if you could write your question and make sure you use your jury number, not your badge number. We've switched over. I'm sorry. I swear I won't give you another number. Remember. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you ever notice a car or see anyone else approach the Randolph house minutes before they arrived at 8:33 p.m. on May 8th?
No, I did not.
Okay. State the email may follow up based on the jury questions.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Warren?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you, ladies and gentlemen, have any further questions for this witness? Okay. Seeing no phone, sir, you're excused. Thank you very much for coming here today.
On the next witness, Your Honor, we'll be playing a video. I think we need to set up the speakers, but then we can roll.
Okay, you're playing video when he starts, or is your health
has... Well, I would like a chance to test out the audio, and it would be hard to do with the 12 members in the box.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have to take a brief recess so we can make sure we have all the audio equipment set up for you. During this recess, you must not discuss or communicate with anyone, including the federal jurors, in any way regarding this case or its merits.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.